Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets. It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. New World Report, Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College, traveling. He's in the Kingdom of Netherlands in the New World, the ABC Islands off the coast of Venezuela. We're headed to Mexico City, where there is a new administration and a new president, Claudia Sheinbaum. Of note, Claudia Sheinbaum is most devoted to improving financial situation in Mexico, which has been troubled these last weeks. The peso has weakened, needs outside investors, needs everything. However, I note one incident looks emblematic of perhaps where we're going. The announcement by the Mexican Navy of a large drug bust, huge amount of contraband, and apparently taking on a major cartel. I don't know if this is showboating or whether this is significant. Also, the puzzle, Professor, why the Navy is operating as if it was a special commando unit of the police. Is this a legacy of AMLO's administration?
Well, great question, John. So first of all, historically, Mexico has a unique situation with its military where the Mexican Navy is a separate entity from the Mexican Army, although in recent years, there's been some moves to give the Army more power. The Mexican Navy has traditionally been a little bit closer to the United States. It's been considered a little bit more free of corruption. But as both the Army and Navy have gotten increased responsibilities for governance in recent years, the Navy took over the port sector. And the other piece that is connected to what you alluded to is that there have been more and more flows of drugs, especially from on the Pacific, from Colombia in the north of Ecuador up to Guatemala, and then landing oftentimes in the coast of Mexico before going north, as well as, frankly, increasing flows through the Caribbean as well. And so as those flows have increased, as source countries like Colombia have literally become awash in cocaine, as Venezuela has become a producer as well, you see more and more shipments through all of those areas. And so the fact that the Mexican Navy's SAMAR had a bust of 8.4 kilograms, that's enormous, of cocaine. I think it indicates the volume, the increased volumes that are actually going through the region. And you know, there may be something around it, that in that narcos traditionally will offer up one major shipment to divert so that even bigger shipments can make it through. But without knowing the details, the scale of this, I think, both showcases that the good work of the Mexican Navy in dealing with these increasing maritime flows, and just really how serious that the problem with cocaine outflows from the region are becoming.
I see that Cuba's electricity grid, which has been weak for some time, has collapsed several times over these last days. And I see that Claudia Sheinbaum is concerned about the people of Cuba and is offering aid in some fashion to establish the electricity grid. Now, the reason the grid is in trouble is because of poor maintenance and bad governance. However, the Sheinbaum connection is new to me. Was AMLO involved in the Havana regime? Is this something she's inherited from AMLO?
Well, historically, going back even to the pre-1990s era, when the Revolutionary Institutional Party, the PRI, was in charge in Mexico, Mexico always had a prided itself on an independent policy of the United States, and a policy that was open to dealing with the left. Indeed, Mexico was one of the states that brokered things with Cuba at a time during the Cold War, when the United States was had a very hard line on Cuba. Mexico prided itself on hosting negotiations with the Fuerza de Marte Liberation Movement, FMLN, in El Salvador during the Salvadoran Civil War. And so Mexico's influence in Central America and in the Caribbean, where it has a historical presence, has always been there. Mexico for really about 20 years was very close to the United States under the Calderón sexenio, was under the Peña Nieto sexenio. So in many ways, AMLO, Claudia Sheinbaum is clearly accelerating Mexico's return to a path that diverges from a close to the U.S. foreign policy and security policy and begins to embrace the Latin American left, much like it did back in the old days of, prior to all of that. And so the Cuba, with its dramatic problems from electrical neglect, Claudia Sheinbaum announced that the Mexican government may provide a line of credit of up to $20 billion to help Mexico restore its to help Cuba restore its power grid, and even possibly construct a new refinery, leveraging Mexican Pemex oil workers. So again, if you're wondering in Mexico, where all of Mexico's taxpayer money is going, it's a it's politically very controversial for the opposition, but I think it's also an indication of the new posture that Mexico is taking back to its roots of embracing regimes like Cuba. And I think that creates some concerns for the position of this country so close to the United States with respect to a region that is ever more turning to the left as we in the U.S. try to navigate that situation and have cooperation within the region.
I mention crime because there's an item in Reuters. Chilpancingo, however you say that, these is people protesting the sadistic murder of a very young mayor named Arcos and saying that Sheinbaum is just like AMLO. She's going to let the cartels run riot. Is this an indication that Sheinbaum has not proved herself to the Mexican people? This seems very early in her time to be protesting what she can and can't do about the cartels.
Well, John, certainly one of the things that's happened, and it doesn't have anything to do with Claudia Sheinbaum herself, but really it does reflect, as you pointed out, the AMLO's posture of moving away from a lot of direct action against the cartels, especially Sinaloa, and trying to really focus more on reducing the violence. And so under AMLO, in part because of a probably ill-conceived reorganization of the Mexican military and the elimination of the Mexican federal police, but also with respect to who AMLO went after, you had an explosion of violence that's actually gotten worse right with the transition, because one of the key people in the Sinaloa cartel, El Mayo Zambada, was of course taken to the United States, and also one of the key members of his rivals, a group of children of El Chapo Guzman, known as Los Chapitos, were also taken to the United States. And so, those two extraditions have basically set off a power struggle in a key era in Sinaloa state itself, in Culiacán, that's led even there to about 230 people being killed. The particular thing that happened with the decapitation of the mayor, Alejandro Arcos, in Chilpancingo, that appears to be kind of one minor story. Apparently, he was meeting with one of the rival narco gangs, a group called Los Ardillos, and probably somebody from one of his rivals decided they didn't like that the mayor was cooperating with their rival and killed him in a very bloody fashion to send a message. But it certainly illustrates the way in which Claudia Sheinbaum has an enormous problem with respect to the cartels and security policy, that she's going to have to think very clearly through how she does that, and especially the importance of cooperating with the United States, as we've had for so long, even as she's seeming to move away from the United States in various other areas.
Professor, in the political conversation of these last months especially, Remain in Mexico keeps coming up. Remain in Mexico was a policy, I believe, under the Trump administration, perhaps before that under the Obama administration. I don't know. You'll help me understand that. But it was suspended or set aside or not used during the Biden administration, and both major candidates have talked about it. Is something such as Remain in Mexico, perhaps under a new name, is that attractive to Sheinbaum, to our knowledge? Is that a story that we'll see come back no matter who is the winner in 25?
Well, I think, John, migration cooperation is absolutely going to be a story, especially as you see through some of the effects in the United States, through the violence, through the Venezuelans that come in and train de Aragua, exploiting them, as well as other things, especially as we have the election and move past the election. But Mexico had long been cooperating with the United States in one way or another, but What essentially had happened is that during the end of the Obama administration, the early Trump administration, you had the beginnings of a massive exploitation of a loophole in the U.S. system, which is that if you ask for asylum, rather than just coming in for economic reasons, you got an automatic court hearing, you could be released into the United States. And so the way that President Trump dealt with it, understanding that there couldn't be dramatic changes in laws and it was going to take a while to do things like build border walls, is that we actually exploited some provisions of our own laws, saying that if you're asking for asylum, if you actually have not looked for asylum in one of the states that you're coming through, then you can't just automatically be granted asylum in the United States. And so it was a way of stemming the flow of that ask for asylum loophole. And so Remain in Mexico was a policy in which we basically coordinated this with the Mexican government, but that people would stay there. When the Biden administration came in, very quickly they basically undid so many of the different Trump administration policies, and that essentially reopened the floodgates. But you're seeing the same types of cooperation that occurred under the Trump administration with Remain in Mexico. Some of that de facto cooperation did continue to occur under AMLO, and that was extremely helpful as the number of migrants, especially Venezuelans, came through. But the issue now is that if we're moving away from cooperation in the security sector with this new Sheinbaum administration, in terms of their help controlling migrants and in terms of their help on, on narco trafficking, the implications of that for the flows across the U.S. border, if we don't fix the border system, are going to be catastrophic. And so I'd say the question of continuing cooperation or changes in security cooperation with our Mexican counterparts, with this new flavor of politics we have with Claudia Sheinbaum, again, that's gonna unleash a lot of other migration issues that I suspect we'll be talking about here on this show in the coming months and perhaps even beyond.
We have 2 minutes for good news. Argentina likely had a trade surplus for the 10th straight month, helping to accumulate net $16 billion in hard currency for the new president, Javier Milei. Is that as good a news as it looks like in the report from Reuters, Professor?
Well, good news keeps coming out of Argentina thanks to Javier Milei's good macroeconomic management. They just have to get investors coming in and the generation of jobs. But again, the Argentine productive sectors, the agricultural sector, the mining sector are continuing to export stuff. But because the demand in Argentina, because of the austerity policies, have fallen off, so you're selling a lot more stuff to the rest of the world. You're still not importing as much stuff. And so that is good for stabilizing the economy and building up foreign currency reserves, which is what you need for a basis for a trading economy. He's also gotten inflation under control. It may be as low as 18% next year. He's gotten deficits under control. You've had over 6 months of surplus, which again creates the basis for fiscal stability. He's gotten some laws through which allow privatization. He's reduced some of the size of government. So he's really done at a level of great pain for the Argentine people, a lot of things that are right. Now it's a question again of just getting that investment into the country so that the Argentine economy can begin to reactivate. There's some hope that if everything goes right, the Argentine economy could expand in a healthy way by as much as 5% in 2025. We can only hope, but again, it is a positive news story that when you make hard but good economic decisions, that eventually good things start to happen.
We do need to note, however, that the poverty is severe, Professor. I was reading about people who are not capable, really, at this point of balancing their diet and their daily activities. That is a burden for Javier Milei as well, and it does not look like there's an easy solution. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. With the shutdown of the economy, the change in federal workers, the loss of demand, and also the increase in prices with the end to certain subsidies, for example, in utilities, public transportation, poverty increased from a very bad situation from the Peronists, about 44% poverty when Milei came to power, to somewhere over 60% poverty now. But again, at the end of the day, the answer to poverty is investment in jobs and the reactivation of the economy, as well as certainly some degree of social safety net. So it is that is the key political factor and probably the key to really translating this macroeconomic success into a country that's livable for the Argentine people. Because as you point out, for a lot of people, this has been horrific these past couple months in terms of their daily lives.
Professor Avenelis, U.S. Army War College.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Quick, choose a meal deal with McValue. The $5 McChicken meal deal, the $5 McDouble meal deal, or the new $6 Daily Double meal deal. Each with its own small fries, drink, and four-piece McNuggets.
It's actually no rush. I'm just excited for McDonald's.
For a limited time only, prices and participation may vary. Not valid for McDelivery.
This episode of Unfiltered is brought to you by Google Gemini. U.S. college students get Gemini's Pro plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.